This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Now, here's your host, Jeff Mellor.
Meidroth hits a hard grounder under the glove of Casas. He tried to backhand it, and we'll see how they'll score it. I think it's going to be a hit.
I think that should be an error. That's just me. When you drop to a knee, you reach out, and it goes right under your glove.
I'm with you on the what it should be, but usually that's a hit, and it is. First major league hit.
I knew it all along. It's
first major league hit for Meidroth.
Take it any way you can get it.
There you go, the truth tellers, Darren Jackson and Len Casper, let you know that Chase Meidroth's first major league hit yesterday here at Rate Field should have been an error. Party poopers. I'm Jeff Mellor. Welcome to White Sox Weekly. No, they were just telling it like it is, but whether or not it was home cooking doesn't matter to me because last evening was a fabulous night on the South Side as the White Sox beat the Red Sox and snap their losing streak and hopefully start a winning streak. Back at it today. First pitch coming your way at 3:10. We'll have your pregame coverage starting at 2:30. But up until then, plenty of White Sox talk, White Sox coverage on White Sox Weekly right now as I will be with you for the next 2 hours before the pregame show gets going. We'll let you hear from White Sox general manager Chris Getz. He spoke with the media yesterday before the homestand began. Very optimistic and positive about the approach from the White Sox so far this season despite the poor results. So I left feeling a little bit upbeat about where they were, and then sure enough, paid off because the White Sox cashed in yesterday with a thumping of the Red Sox. And today, hopefully, Martin Perez, who has been excellent, can get the better of Richard Fitz, who's on the mound for the Red Sox. And hopefully, the White Sox can start a win streak today and get things moving in the right direction. That's what they did yesterday. On the back of Chase Meidroth, the rookie got the call to the show. He had, you heard there, his first major league hit. He also reached base three other times through the walk, scored a couple of runs, was actually lifted in the game. Will Venable mentioned how he took him out because he was dehydrated. They wanted to get ahead of it. They didn't want him to end up having something worse happen, so they took him out of the game with the huge lead, so nothing to be concerned about. And Chase Meidroth was in good spirits after the game when he was asked what it was like to make his debut and get to compete against the Red Sox, the team that drafted him.
It was really fun competing against all those guys, and you know, I got to talk to them before the game and, you know, on the field and playing against them. It was awesome.
When did it kind of hit you? When were you? Was it when you ran out for the anthem or after the anthem? When did it kind of hit you that you were there? This is your debut.
I think at breakfast this morning, it was like, all right, this is go time now. And then it was a lot of fun. Once I got out there, we got such a good group here, and they made the transition super easy for me. And you know, it was another baseball game, and I had a lot of fun playing here tonight.
What did it mean to be able to get that first knock out of the way as well?
Oh, you know, it's a lot. Obviously, I think everyone says it's weight off of shoulders, and I can, yeah, say that happened there.
And you get to score runs, too.
Yeah, that was the best part.
That's your favorite stat, right?
Run scored.
Why is that your favorite stat?
Can't win without run scored.
You said earlier you got here to the ballpark really early today. Well, in hindsight, do you think it was the right move, or is it too much dead time in between?
No, 100%. I wouldn't change it. I think it was good for me to get here early and kind of take it all in before everything gets situated.
You know, starting the season in AAA, how do you feel like that time just kind of better prepared you for this moment here tonight?
Oh, 100%. There's a really good coaching staff down there, and so it was awesome to be able to work with them and the players down there and the young guys that are hungry and ready to keep competing. So it was awesome.
You're obviously playing with these guys all spring. What was the point where butterflies kind of went away? It just became like baseball again.
I think right after like the first out there, kind of running out there, it was like, you know, it's back and we're playing fun baseball's fun and these guys make it fun. So it was a blast tonight.
What was your family reaction?
I don't know. I haven't talked to them yet, but I'm sure they are pumped up.
The proverbial first guy in the clubhouse, last guy to leave. And I don't know if he was the last guy to leave, but as we were wrapping up the postgame show, Brendan Riley and I, a couple of the last people out of the stadium, Chase Myedroth was down on the field taking pictures with family and friends who attended the game. So it's very possible that Chase Myedroth was the first guy into the clubhouse last night and the last guy to leave. He's back in the lineup today playing shortstop. He's actually been moved up. He's hitting six today. I'll get you a full lineup here later in the show, but good to see Chase Myedroth have so much success for the White Sox last night. It's exactly what the team needed, a nice shot in the arm. White Sox did have one. They did make one roster move before today that we're aware of. They placed Austin Slater on the injured list. He was scratched last night right before game time. He was initially in the lineup hitting third, but he was scratched prior to today's game against the Red Sox. He was placed on the 10-day injured list, retroactive to April 11th with a right knee meniscus tear. The Sox have recalled outfielder Greg Jones from Class AAA Charlotte. So Slater will be on the injured list for at least 10 days here, retroactive to April 11th. 312-332-3776 if you want to hop on, talk some White Sox. As I said, we do have Chris Getz coming your way and expected to have a conversation with White Sox breakout star Shane Smith, who will be on the mound tomorrow against Garrett Crochet. So that will be a fantastic pitching matchup, at least on paper, for you. So Shane Smith, expected to talk to him here coming up next. White Sox fans, looking for the best way to start your game day? Treat your group to a pregame patio party. You'll get 2 hours of an all-you-can-eat buffet, along with unlimited beer, wine, and Coca-Cola products. For more information, visit whitesox.com/party areas or call 312-674-1000. When we come back, we expect to hear from Shane Smith right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.
Swing and a miss, strike three. And he strikes out. And he fouled tips for strike three. Called strike three on a changeup. He froze him. He's got three straight punch outs, two down here in the second. It's really on you. And a swing and a miss. Oh, an awkward cut by Kwan on a changeup. And he strikes out, which 2-2. He got him swinging on a slider for strike three. Swing and a miss, strike three. They sent Santana on the move, but it doesn't matter. Theis was going to tag him. Umpire called him out.
Those highlights of Shane Smith striking out people. Pretty cool to hear. Len Casper on the call on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000, the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Shane Smith, I love these stats. Courtesy of Codify, is the first pitcher to throw at least 11 and two-thirds innings in his first two Major League Baseball games and allow no more than four total bases since Shovel Hodge did it for the 1920 White Sox. Excuse me. How about that? Shovel Hodge, as we bring in Shane Smith right here on White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller. How about that, Shane? You ever think I'd be bringing you in talking about Shovel Hodge?
Yeah, I did not have that on my bingo card when I got told I was going to Chicago.
I'll be honest, I didn't either. That's pretty funny. I love those stats. But that's just kind of a testament to how you've started the season. Shane, I want just like a lot of White Sox fans who were watching in spring training were just starting to familiarize themselves with you. What's it been like for you? How was it when, like, I know you're in baseball, but did you know what the whole Rule 5 draft process was like before you were actually the first overall pick this winter?
It was a learning curve for me, kind of realizing, yeah. Are you added to the 40-man? You're then, you have to be in the big leagues for the full year. And then, anticipation into the draft, but not thinking too much about it because, you never really know what teams are thinking. And then to go first overall was a blessing and a really crazy experience for me and my family. And then to, get the nod that I'm going to Chicago has been a crazy couple of months.
No, it's pretty cool. So it's a little bit of a different path though, Shane, because, last night, Chase Myedroth makes his debut. He gets the call up. He's in AAA. His manager's telling him that, you had to go out and earn your spot with a good spring, no doubt about it, but it's a little bit different, right? When you see those videos that everyone's posting of, hey, Chase, you made the big leagues. It had to be a little bit different for you because you're thinking, hey, the White Sox are investing in me, and so if I go out and prove myself, they're definitely committed to having me on the roster, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I try not to think about it, you know, too much going into the spring, but I absolutely knew that, you know, my back is against the wall, and you know, being a Rule 5, you don't have a ton of flexibility in season to get optioned or moved around a ton. So, you know, I knew I had to make the team and make a statement, and I think I did that in the spring. But, you know, Chase, I'm super happy for Chase, though. You know, seeing that video, you know, as my video kind of went, was put out there, it was touching to see the messages and, you know, just to see Chase and the reaction that he had, you know, I'm really excited for him and really happy for him from yesterday.
Yeah, no, and he had a great start to it. Maybe we'll get into that in a little bit, but how about, too, like, the late in spring, you got the news from your workout buddy, Mike Vassell, who we actually had on a couple weeks ago. I mean, someone who you work out with in the winter, who you know from your days and, you know, playing in high school. What was that like when Mike gave you a call or texted you and said, hey, guess what? I'll see you in Chicago.
Yeah, I couldn't even believe it. He shot me a text kind of, I think it was like the second or last day, the last day of spring. And he said, see you in Chicago. And I couldn't believe it. And then, you know, my dad texted me and said, hey, Vassell, you know, Vassell got picked up by you guys. And I was like, what the heck is going on? So, yeah, I texted with him back and forth, and then I got to Chicago a day later, and we got dinner and we chatted up. But, you know, really cool to have him here and somebody that, you know, I've grown pretty close to over the last couple of years, you know, with that connection we had beforehand. So, you know, working out with him, you know, building that friendship and that relationship, and, you know, for him to be here and throwing well has been really cool to see.
Yeah, no, he's picked up the ball and done well when called upon, too, out of the pen. So love having you here. Shane Smith joining us here on White Sox Weekly. All right, Shane, so what's been working for you? I know, you know, a lot of people around baseball, now that they're getting to watch you, you know, in extended periods more closely, everyone's raving about that changeup, which, if I'm correct here, I read that you taught yourself?
Yeah, it was a you know, trial and error for a while. But going into this off season, kind of before the Rule 5 happened, I knew I wanted to add a pitch, and I thought a changeup would be a really good addition to my repertoire just with the slider and curveball. So I thought, you know, if I, you know, put my head against the, you know, put my head to throwing a changeup, then I think I can. Yeah. And I think that's been a huge addition. I mean, it's a plus pitch metrically, thankfully, but, you know, just having something that I can change speeds a little bit, even though it's kind of a power change, but, you know, changing speed and being able to throw for strikes and then also having a slider and curveball to throw off of that has been, you know, I think a really good way for me to keep hitters off balance and mess with timing.
No doubt about it. It definitely has been a plus pitch. Shane Smith joining us here on White Sox Weekly. What's it been like for you working with the White Sox pitching infrastructure, in particular guys like Brian Bannister and Ethan Katz?
Yeah, they've been great, especially when I first showed up in the spring. You know, they got their eyes on my stuff and my changeup, and they said, you know, you just gotta. That's a, you know, a plus pitch. You have to throw that, and so them having confidence in that pitch, you know, really helped me to be, you know, confident in throwing it and realizing that, you know, good things are going to happen probably more often than not when I throw that pitch. So, you know, Bannister's, you know, really smart guy, and he says a ton of stuff that, you know, even I don't fully understand, but I can, you know, I can piece it together, because he's just got such an in-depth understanding of what a baseball does once it leaves your hand, and you just don't really see that all the time. And Katz has been huge with, you know, me being myself and, you know, what does it look like to be in a big league game facing big league hitters? You know, what are bullpens look like during the week and kind of helping me mold what that routine and preparation looks like.
Shane Smith joining us here on White Sox Weekly. Shane, I have to imagine, maybe I'm wrong, I don't want to assume too much here, but when Rob Friedman, the pitching ninja, throws up, you know, a 3-second video and throws out absolutely filthy, that's got to be a pretty cool moment for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, really cool. Really cool. I mean, I've been, ever since he, you know, popped up a couple of years ago, I've absolutely paid attention to kind of what he's doing, because he puts, you know, a lot of gross pitches and a lot of good sequences out there, which is really cool to see. But he also puts out a lot of, you know, his interviews with other pitchers, and some of that other media he puts out is, you know, you can listen to you know, any assortment of guys with really good stuff and listen about, you know, how they talk about the game, how they think about the game. So I think Rob does a really cool job, and for him to put my stuff up there is, you know, is really cool to see.
Well, listen, I have no doubt that you keep doing what you're doing, and you're going to get the invites very soon to be on the show with him. Yeah, it is pretty cool, to, you know, for Sox fans to see, you know, just the and all of everyone out there, Codify too, saying, hey, there hasn't been a pitch thrown in the big leagues this year that was faster, dropped more, and had more horizontal movement than this Shane Smith's changeup. So when you see stuff like that, you know what you're doing is working. Shane, growing up in Massachusetts, were you a Red Sox fan?
I was. Yeah, I was a Red Sox fan. Up until December 11th.
who was your guy growing up that you rooted for, whether it be a pitcher or a hitter? Who was just like your favorite player?
I loved Curt Schilling in those early years. You know, 04, I named my dog after him.
Did you go with Curt or Schilling, or what was the dog's name?
We went with Schilling. Curt probably would have been a little too human like, but yeah, you know, he was really cool. I think Papelbon was a really cool name, but I also loved, you know, Big Poppy, and Manny Ramirez was somebody that I thought, you know, encapsulated kind of what Boston was about. He played hard, I think, and he had a little bit of swag with him. I don't really capture any of that, but, you know, I think he was just really fun to watch back then.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Listen, everybody who remembers the Red Sox teams, even if you weren't necessarily a Red Sox fan, those were some fun teams to watch, no doubt about it. Shane Smith joining me for another moment here on White Sox Weekly. How about on the staff, Shane? What like Martin Perez is pitching today, savvy vet. Have you picked up anything from him? He's somebody who, you know, the first couple times out, he's done a nice job of, you know, really keeping hitters off balance without really throwing anything above 90. Is there anything you can learn from a savvy vet like that watching him?
Yeah, so you can learn so much from him. You know, certain days I try and, you know, sit by him and pick his brain. Just, you know, what he sees in the game, but also the trust and the confidence that he has in himself and his stuff is really, you know, something that I want to emulate. You know, the way he thinks about, you know, like you said, he doesn't throw anything, you know, maybe over 90, 91. But the way he changes speeds and the way he reads a hitter and the way he sees swings is really, really cool to watch. You know, he'll go change up, and then a back to our cutter. And it's like there's not much, you know, if he's throwing a righty, there's not much a righty can do with that pitch. You know, or he'll go up and in to a cutter in and then to a changeup, and it's, you know, just the way he's setting up and changing eye levels, you know, getting in, getting out, getting in. You know, I will continue to learn from him and pick his brain, and I'm excited to see him throw today.
Shane, I love hearing you talk about that because, you know, this day and age, it's so easy to get caught up in the velocity and watching guys just go out there and, you know, unload and then not really be able to pitch. But to hear you just talk about that and say, hey, I can pick things up watching a guy like Martin Perez pitch is cool from a baseball fan's perspective. Just hearing you talk about that and knowing that you know, want to go out there and be a pitcher, not just a thrower, it's pretty cool to hear. Shane Smith joining me here on White Sox Weekly after they got a win. All right, so before I let you go, I have to ask, I mean, you're not going to be technically opposing him, but Garrett Crochet, who pitched here last year for the White Sox, obviously, they traded him in the offseason. He's going to be on the mound in his return against the White Sox. Any extra motivation for you tomorrow having that marquee matchup? Because I'm telling you, around baseball, when you look at the pitching probables, I think that's going to be the one that everybody's looking at tomorrow and saying, all right, Smith and Crochet, we got to watch this one.
Yeah, I don't think too much of it. You know, I don't know him personally, and, you know, obviously I know that he's really good, but, you know, I'm more worried about their lineup than who they're throwing. But I think it'll be a good game.
Listen, smart answer. You're already a savvy vet, Shane. I appreciate it. Thanks for joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Keep on doing what you're doing. It's working, and we're having fun as White Sox fans watching it. So hopefully go out there tomorrow and get the win, man.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it.
That is Shane Smith joining us here on White Sox Weekly. Yeah, just love hearing him talk about pitching and the approach to it, right? Leaning on Martin Perez going, you know, he mentioned there he can go change up, and then give you a cutter. And just keeping hitters off balance, never knowing what you're going to throw, can put a pitcher in such an advantageous position. Pretty cool to hear. And to see Shane Smith have the early season success. And something that I think the White Sox really can build on, because I don't think it's an anomaly. I think what he talked about, that change being a plus pitch, he's added it. He's got some pretty good velocity to offset that. And I'm not saying you have a bona fide ace. Obviously, the only way you can get to that point is by Shane Smith going out and repeating it day after day, start after start. But it looks like the White Sox have a really nice find here, and I'm really excited about the prospects that he has, and he'll be on the mound tomorrow in the series finale against the Red Sox here at Wright Field, as the White Sox and Red Sox have game two today, and I said game three tomorrow, Crochet up against Shane Smith, and then today we've got Martin Perez up against Richard Fitz. I do owe you a White Sox lineup that I want to give folks here if you're headed to the game today or if you're just listening as well. Lineups are out today. And for the White Sox, you've got Miguel Vargas leading off, playing third base. Nick Maton is DHing and hitting second, the lefty. Luis Robert Jr. has been bumped down to third, playing center field. Andrew Vaughn is cleaning up, playing first base. Joshua Palacios is batting fifth in right field today. Chase Meidroth back in the lineup at shortstop today. He played second yesterday, back in the lineup at short today, hitting sixth. Lenin Sosa is at second base and batting seventh. Omar Narvaez is the left-handed catcher today, batting eighth. And then Michael A. Taylor, after a nice night last night, back in the lineup in left field and batting ninth. For the Red Sox, Romy Gonzalez plays first base and leads off. Rafael Devers is DHing, batting second. Alex Bregman plays third, bats third. Rob Refsnyder is cleaning up, playing left field for the Red Sox today. Trevor Story at short, bats fifth. Christian Campbell is sixth and playing second base. Willy Abreu is in right field and batting seventh. Carlos Narvaez is catching, and that is probably a sad sign for the White Sox, because you would have liked to have seen Blake Sable back in the lineup. He, unfortunately for the Red Sox, was a butcher last night behind the plate. Did not help them out defensively, as they had five errors in the game last night and probably could have been charged for six if the scorekeepers wanted to. And then Seidan Rafaela rounds out the Red Sox lineup in center field today, again with Martin Perez on the mound for the White Sox and Richard Fitz on the mound for the Red Sox. Hey, Sox fans, looking for the best way to start your game day? Treat your group to a pregame patio party. You'll get 2 hours of an all-you-can-eat buffet along with unlimited beer, wine, and Coca-Cola products. For more information, visit whitesox.com/party areas or call 312-674-1000. When we come back, we'll let you hear from Chris Getz, the White Sox general manager who met the media yesterday. Lots of optimistic stuff coming from the GM. Still likes the approach from the team, despite the fact that they haven't had some of the great results, and was really excited about what Chase Meidroth brings to the team. We'll let you hear what the White Sox had to say when we come back right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Jeff Miller live at Wright Field as we get set for another beautiful day of baseball. Maybe I say another. Yesterday wasn't It was the result was beautiful. The weather not as beautiful as it looks today. High 50s and the forecast, and just sun is out. Looks like a fabulous day for baseball. So coming out, White Sox and Red Sox today. Martin Perez up against Richard Fitz. Join us at the ballpark for Family Sundays presented by Coca-Cola. Tickets starting at only $10. Enjoy Kids Run the Bases postgame, caricature artists, and more. To learn more and purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Sunday. All right, if you missed it yesterday, Chris Getz, you probably didn't get to catch all of it, so we're going to bring it to you, because a lot of good stuff, and Chris Getz still has a positive outlook about where the team is at, despite the fact that things certainly didn't go their way on the road trip. This was Chris Getz meeting the media, talking about the rough road trip before yesterday's game.
I'll start with this. We're excited to have Chase Meidroth join us today. Obviously a big moment for Chase in his career to make his major league debut, this evening. For any player, it's such a large moment just because of, what you put into it, whether, when you're young and to finally, get this chance to put on a major league uniform is special. And on top of that, it's, of course, against the Red Sox too, which I think is probably even extra special for him in a moment like this. And we want him just to be as comfortable as possible, go out there and, and be himself. But really proud of him and how he's handled his business in Charlotte. I've enjoyed getting to know him since he became a White Sox. And I look forward to seeing his major league career play out. So we're excited about that. Coming back from the road trip here, obviously a tough one from a wins and losses standpoint. You know, the outcome of the games, you know, it certainly can get to you, can be emotional. You know, there were very tight games. Sometimes when you have tight games and you're getting walked off, those hurt more than ones that, you know, there's a little bit more gap in the score. But there were a lot of positives as well. You know, I certainly appreciated, you know, the hustle from our players. I know that, you know, going down the line, whether it be Louis Robert or Corey Lee, you know, finishing plays to beat out double plays or balls that, you know, took a first baseman off the bag, and because they got down the line, they were able to you know, continue the inning and give us a chance to score more runs. You know, beyond the record, you look at, you know, some of the underlying production, things that I've talked about from the beginning in regards to measuring success of this season. Really happy of where our leads are. We're in the top 10 in the league in regards to primary leads. Obviously, over time, that's going to lead to more runs, run production. You know, offensively, our swing decisions have been at the top of the league as well, which is a testament to the process that we've put in place and the execution of these players. Obviously, you know, it hasn't showed up in the win and loss column, but we know over time that we're certainly on the right track. Defensively, you look at where we were last year in terms of saving runs, we've made a remarkable jump to where we are today in regards to our defensive play. So things that we have prioritized going into the season, so far we've accomplished some things, but ultimately the goal is to win more ball games. But we know that it is a long season, and we've got our work cut out for us, but if we stay the course, we feel like we'll be rewarded when it comes to wins.
When you're
listening to White Sox GM Chris Getz, let's pause 10 seconds for legal identification.
Moments that perhaps you want to throw things, but I don't throw things. I think my family can attest that. I normally just start pacing. You know, it is a result-oriented business, but we also know that baseball, you know, you play 162 games, and, you know, if you're just chasing end results, that's when you'll get in trouble. You'll get hitters that they're just trying to get hits, and all of a sudden they're chasing out of the zone. Our hitters have not chased out of the zone. You know, we've got pitchers that are, you know, perhaps attacking hitters the wrong way, versus sticking to the plan, optimizing the game plan that they've set out going into a particular game. So although we know the results are vital, the most important thing in this game, getting those results, you have to point back to a process, and you've got to be very disciplined in that process, and that's the beauty of baseball.
Is Chase going to play pretty much every day? Is that what you're looking at with him up here?
Yes, yeah. Well, Chase, the plan is it's for him to play regularly. You know, it's you know, he deserves that, and, you know, he'll get the opportunity to do that.
Another prospect, you know, besides Chase, is Colson, who obviously draws a lot of attention, is your probably number one position player prospect. He's had a very slow start down there. You talk to people down there, and they feel like he's getting close. What do you hear? What do you see with Colson right now?
Yeah, you know, I've touched base with Colson, actually, and you know, he, when I'm watching the games, he's, you know, he's still, you know, when you watch him move, you watch his defensive play, his base running, even his at-bats right now. He's still the best player on the field. Now, he has not been productive, and you know, he's going through it right now. He really is. But I know that he's determined. He's not going to give up. That's not in his character. He's making adjustments. You know, and right. Sometimes it gets worse before it gets better. You know, and that's you know, a challenging part about this game. You know, and you know, he's down in AAA. He's working. You know, personally, I don't care if he strikes out the next 20 at bats. I know he's going to figure it out. He just has to stay the course and make the right adjustment, because it's going to click. I believe in that. He believes in that as well. And it's just a matter of time. So we're supporting him. We still think the world of him. He's part of our plans, moving forward. So, you know, we haven't lost sight of him, and we haven't lost faith.
When you broke camp, what was the reason why Chase wasn't with the team to begin with and not now?
So Chase, he put together some really quality at-bats. He wasn't getting hits, but his plate discipline was very good. Towards the end of camp, I would say certainly the second half, I could tell that he was pressing a little bit. And I didn't want to bring him up to Chicago and, you know, coming off of a spring training without getting the results that he wanted, that all of a sudden, you know, I didn't get results in spring training. Now I need to show them right now. It was just an unnecessary thing to do for a young player that we believe in. He's got a tremendous process. When we sat down with him at the end of camp, Will had a great conversation with him. There were some things he needed to work on. And, you know, lo and behold, he goes down there and he does it. It just speaks to his ability and understanding of, you know, an offensive approach that's going to serve him well. You know, he's been playing a lot of shortstop. He did that well in spring training, continued to do that, early going in Charlotte. You know, he's very good at second base as well. He's going to play both those positions while he's up here. So overall, we just feel like he's in a better spot now. There were you know, a couple different factors. Most importantly, he's gotten some results, so he can come in with hopefully a little bit more confidence, and we look forward to watching that play out.
It could be hard to parse the offensive results from Charlotte. Have you seen underlying adjustments he's made to drive the ball more that, you know, back up what he's been doing so far?
You know, it's not, you know, we certainly weren't preaching an intent to drive the baseball more. It was more an aggressiveness that was going to be needed within his at-bats. And, not only was he still, you know, very disciplined, he also was attacking pitches earlier in counts that we know that is going to be necessary for him at this level. So, it just speaks to his ability to really tap into parts of his game that others, perhaps it's a little bit more challenging. We feel like he's in a pretty good spot right now.
How are Mike and Corey coming along after the initial injuries?
So Tauk, it's a grade 2 hamstring strain. He's going to be out for a couple weeks. Obviously that's tough for Tauk and tough for us. I mean, he was putting together some really solid at-bats on a regular basis. So, we need to get him well and get him back as quickly as we can. Corey, he rolled his ankle pretty well. We've imaged it, it's an ankle sprain. It's going to take a little bit of time. These next couple days as he gets treatment, we'll get a better idea with the timetable.
Chris, you mentioned not getting results. Luis Robert has struggled at the plate with his chase rates down, his bad speeds up. How do you feel about how his approach is coming along?
You look at the whole, his walk rate is up. He's not chasing like he has in the past when he's gone through struggles. So, early on in the season, I know players look up and they look at a batting average and, just their numbers in general. And, you've got to be mindful that you've got to stick to the plan. And he's been very intentional with how he's approaching his at-bats right now. He hasn't gotten the hit results. Early on, especially when the weather's cold, I think it's vital for guys to take their walks. And then that'll pay off as the season goes on. So, we still feel like he's in a very good spot. And beyond Louis, there's others as well. There's the plate discipline has been very good. There's been some unlucky results offensively. We've hit the ball pretty hard. We just haven't found our holes. But we believe that eventually better results will come.
When Coach Hay signed his contract, what was your reaction?
It's a lot of money. I still go back to, Garrett, and I'm happy for him. I really am. And I'm happy for the White Sox, too. We look at, what he was able to accomplish. That obviously was a team effort last year. We made the hard decision to make a trade. And we brought back some players that we're really excited about, and Chase Mydros, one of them, and joining our Major League club. So I don't necessarily look forward to facing him on Sunday, but I'm happy for Garrett. Very deserving. But I think organizations feel really good about that deal.
Brandon Drury, I know a guy you were high on in spring training. Now that he's back in the organization, I know he's in Arizona, but just where do you see him fitting in and just his progress?
I mean, he had a very good spring training. You know, you looked at his bat speed and some of the balls that he was driving. It looked like, you know, years prior when he had some really successful seasons at the major league level. It was unfortunate that they had a fracture in his hand. He feels pretty good right now. You know, the bone is healing. He's playing in games. We'll get him to Charlotte shortly, where he fits. You know, when you know, we want to get him to go out there and put together productive at-bats. And, you know, if he's doing what he was doing in spring training, you know, he'll be in strong consideration to join the team.
Any timetable for Josh Rojas yet?
Josh, I know he had a really good day today. You know, with any sort of bone break, it takes 4 weeks for the bone to fully heal. You know, when you're talking about something in your foot, for a guy that relies heavily on his defense and his agility, we want to make sure he's completely healed and comfortable. But he's moving along. There's no timetable quite yet, but he is making solid progress.
White Sox general manager addressing Josh Rojas, the latest on him. He, as he said, no timeline just yet, but it will certainly be helpful when he does return to the Major League team. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. More from Chris Getz as well, which we're going to share with you. Lots of good stuff from him. Join us at the ballpark Saturday, May 3rd, as the White Sox take on the Houston Astros at 1:10 p.m. The first 15,000 fans, 21 and over, in attendance will receive a 1972 Dick Allen MVP bobblehead presented by Binnie's. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. More from the White Sox general manager when we come back right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Live from Wright Field, I'm Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly as we bring you up to our pregame coverage, which starts at 2:30 today. First pitch coming your way at 3:10, White Sox and Red Sox. Martin Perez opposed by Richard Fetz for the Red Sox today as the White Sox look to start a winning streak after last night's win snapped their losing streak. Fantastic debut for Chase Mydroth. And Chris Getz met with the media prior to yesterday's game and talked about the tough start for the team. Here's more from the White Sox general manager.
You talk about liking some of the stuff you see from the players during the slow start. What have you liked about what you've seen from Will during the slow start?
Will's consistency and his communication is remained excellent. You know, he understands where we're at and where we need to go. You know, he's got different ideas, and you know, I love brainstorming with him. You know, his leadership style is you know, it's something that's impressive. It continues to impress me on a daily basis. I know that the staff and the players are responding well. And, you know, feel really happy where Will's at right now.
What about the kind of offensive preparation process has upgraded in a way that gives you confidence that these early plate discipline numbers are going to stick?
Well, when you're looking at play, I mean, we're not just talking about one player. We're talking about, you know, an entire roster of improved plate discipline. So that's certainly an indicator that we're on the right track. Obviously, it's still early, and you know, time will tell, but I know that the early signs are really positive, and that was something that we were really intentional about coming in spring training with our work and our approach and our communication with our players, and that they've taken to it.
When you lose three players in 2 days, do you believe that in bad luck, or that you know, you guys had it worse than others? How do you look at
it? I don't view it that way. I really don't. Obviously, you know, we pick up trends that are going around the league, and you know, it's the easy thing to do is to think that you know, you're the team that has bad luck. But if you look around the league and what's happening to starting pitching staffs, pitching in general, injuries to certain players, it happens. I mean, that's the importance of building depth in our organization. That's something that, you know, we've been prioritizing, through this rebuild. So, when players go down, it's unfortunate, but it is part of the game. And the ones that have players that can step up and perform, and oftentimes you'll get players that outperform perhaps the player that went down as well. So you just got to stay at it. It's baseball. It's a long season. And, guys will heal, they'll come back, and other players will get the opportunity to step up as well.
Chris, I believe you played one year with Octavio Dotel. What's your memory of him as your teammate?
He was such a good teammate. Every day, he had a smile on his face. He was a great teammate. He was just a joy to be around, and it's just heartbreaking for Octavio and his family and obviously so many others. Have been affected by that tragedy in the Dominican, and there are other obviously baseball players that tragically lost their lives, and people connected to baseball. Those are the ones that personally I'm most familiar with. But beyond that, it's just such a sad situation. But to have a former teammate, pass away is it's really hard. He'll be missed, not just by me, but by many around the league.
He was a character, right? I mean,
he was fun-loving, yeah. And you need those types of guys. And, he was always willing to take the ball, regardless of, positive or negative outcomes by himself or the team. He was the same person on a daily basis, and that's why he was beloved.
Do you have a timeline on Brian Ramos at this point?
Brian's playing 9 innings in an extended game today, and we'll see how that goes. And we're figuring out next steps.
Is he playing? Is he defending, or is it just DHA at this point?
He's defending. He's playing third base.
How much is what Shane Smith has done kind of giving you some positive reinforcement about where your pitching plans are?
Yeah, Shane's been excellent beyond our own expectations. When you take someone in the Rule 5, obviously you take them for a reason. You believe in the player, for a guy to come into a new organization and do what he's done is phenomenal. And that speaks to, our acquisition process, our development process. But most importantly, it's Shane Smith himself going out there and getting comfortable and attacking and it's exciting to add Shane Smith to the group that we currently have here. Mike Vasil's another one that's pitched well for us. That was a Rule 5 pick by another club that we brought in here. But Shane he's been excellent and look forward to supporting him, through this first season for him.
When you're talking about guys who have shown good plate discipline but haven't seen results yet, it seems like it fits Miguel Vargas to a T. Obviously, he put a lot of work in his body. He's obviously not what results of that are you seeing, even as he's not, piling up hits?
Yeah, his decision-making is solid. It really is. His swing path is cleaner. He's not getting the results that he would like or we would like as an organization, but he's got to stay the course. Being a young hitter in this league is not easy. What he's going through right now with not getting the hit results, he's certainly not the only one. But I do want to talk about his defense. It's been really good at third base. He continues to get better there and help us, save runs on the defensive side. So, we believe in him. I know he believes in himself, and he's going to stay the course, and we believe there's production ahead.
What's your research about on Torpedo? How long have you guys been on it, and is it a real thing?
I do think it's a real thing, and it's a real thing for certain players, based on where they make most of their contact on their bat. I think it's something that certainly our group has been talking about and our players have been talking about for a while. Players are fairly sensitive with the types of bats that they have in their hand for reasons that are sometimes tough to explain, but these guys want to be comfortable. But I do think that the industry is onto something.
You've been upfront about the length of time that the project you're working on might take. Does MyDraft coming up represent a little bit of progress on that front for you?
I think it does. Yeah, he's part of our future. He was a big piece of the Garrett Crochet trade. You look at what he brings to the table, and now to be able to bring someone like Chase Mydroth up here and get major league experience is going to serve him well, which will ultimately serve the organization well.
Is he a one-position guy, or do you expect him to move around?
we'll have him move around, you know, primarily up the middle. You know, he'll play short and second.
One thing on Colson, when you said you talked to him, you know, we found him to be a really confident young man. Is that taking a blow here with this start?
You know, my talking to Colson along with, you know, hearing our PD personnel talk about where he's at from a confidence standpoint, just his mental state, he's still hungry. You know, he knows he's going to find this. So I think he, you know, the when you're going through a challenging moment like this as a player, you know, it's a test. But, you know, he's from the beginning when we drafted him to where he is now, he's always been a guy that's never been in a rush. You know, he really believes in himself as a baseball player, as an athlete. And that really hasn't changed, whether it be Colson, how he feels about himself, or how we feel about Colson.
Chris, did you give any consideration to Edgar Caro or Kyle Teal when Corey Lee was placed on the injured list?
Not really. And I say that because, you know, although they both got a taste of AAA last year, you know, they haven't played. You know, they don't have that many at-bats or that many innings at that level. There's still some areas that they need to grow in and that we're focusing on. So, you know, that was one of the perks of bringing Omar back, knowing that early on if something were to happen to one of our catchers, it was good to have someone that, you know, knows the organization, was with us throughout spring training. And really it's a testament to him that is willing to go to AA for a player that, you know, that has played so many years at the major league level and has had the success that he has. But we had a very candid conversation when he was coming back that although, you know, he was going to AA and not AAA, he understood that we had two high catching prospects there, but he wanted to stay sharp and play. And the best place to do that was in AA. And, you know, that also an added benefit of having him around some of our, you know, young pitchers that we so believe in at the AA level. So there was an added benefit for the White Sox on pitching development, but most importantly, having another quality catcher, you know, in our system for depth, you know, insurances for a situation like this.
That was Chris Getz yesterday talking about the White Sox and where they stand, the approach that they've taken at the plate, the patient approach, the cold weather that they've run into, and he's still optimistic about where they're at, still likes what he's seeing from the team as a whole, and saw some immediate dividends paid yesterday last night as the White Sox snapped their 8-game losing streak and got a win against the Red Sox, and they'll try and start a winning streak today as they are here for a 3:10 first pitch with Martin Perez on the mound up against Richard Fitz for the Red Sox. Hey, White Sox fans, take advantage of one of our best offers this season. Get one ticket and two beers to select games starting at $19 with Miller Lite Baseball and Brews. You must be 21 and over with a valid ID. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/brews. So Perez fits today. Tomorrow we have Shane Smith up against Garrett Crochet, who makes his return in the opposing uniform for the Red Sox on the mound tomorrow. We let you hear from Shane Smith earlier today. Up next, we'll let you hear what Garrett Crochet had to say yesterday in his return to Chicago as a member of the Boston Red Sox. We'll do that. I'm Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back from Wright Field. I'm Jeff Meller, getting set for White Sox and Red Sox Game 2 of the 3-game series. White Sox currently in the midst of a 6-game homestand, 6-game, 7 days. They have the Athletics coming to town Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this upcoming week after they wrap up their series against the Red Sox tomorrow. As I mentioned, Martin Perez up against Richard Fitz today, but tomorrow, don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but quite the pitching matchup slated. You've got Shane Smith, who we already talked with on White Sox Weekly earlier in the show today. Fantastic interview. If you missed it, go ahead and check out the podcast on the ESPN Chicago app. He was very interesting, talked a lot about pitching, what he's learned from Martin Perez, Brian Bannister, Ethan Katz, and just what it was like being the top pick in the Rule 5 draft. So if you missed that, go ahead and check the podcast out on the ESPN Chicago app. But He'll be opposed by a man that White Sox fans know all too well, and that is, of course, Garrett Crochet, who the White Sox traded in December and did receive Chase Mydroth, Kyle Teal, Braden Montgomery, and Wilkelman Gonzalez. Of course, we saw Chase Mydroth, the first piece of that deal, make his debut last night, and it was a sensational debut for Chase Mydroth and the White Sox. But Garrett Crochet talked about the return to right field as a visitor yesterday.
What's your thoughts being back here after everything that transpired?
I didn't really make much of it. Coming back here, though, now that I'm here, it's cool. But, you know, still just trying to win a series. Got to start here, so that's really what I'm most focused on.
Do you talk to anybody over there that you've been friends with? A few of the guys
I kept in contact with just, you know, up until spring training is probably when I had my last contact with most people.
What about your contract? Be able to get that done?
Yeah, incredibly exciting. Happy to be a Boston Red Sox. And when my contract's all said and done, I'll have spent a longer time in Boston than I did in Chicago, which is crazy to think about, but it's cool. I feel like I'm just getting started.
Did you take a peek at the schedule at all? What was playing out? Like, it might end up in Chicago. I might start that weekend.
Yeah, definitely. As soon as the trade went through, I was curious when we came over, and it's funny that the White Sox come to us right when we get back. So it's cool.
When in the middle of the summer, there were some rumors about the White Sox talking to you about contract. It was kind of murky for us to try to figure out. Was there any real discussions in your mind about?
Not really. No, it was. We approached the topic, but it never really got off the ground.
How saddened are you by having to? I mean, I know you're very happy where you're at, but, you know, would you have liked it to have been here?
No, I mean, in the business, unless you're Finerco or Veritek, you don't really wear one color your entire career. So for me right now, I'm just happy to be a Red Sox.
What was that trade experience like for you? Just the switching teams for the first time?
Yeah, it was. It just happened so fast, you know. Like, there's all this buildup, like you said, even going back to before the deadline. And then in the offseason, winter meetings was what I was kind of targeting in my mind. Like, hopefully it'll be done by then. But then once it actually went through, it was just like dunking your head in a bowl of ice water. Like, it just happened so quickly. But I think that it went really smoothly. Just the conversations that I had with the front office over in Boston. And AC immediately reached out, and so did a bunch of my teammates. So I felt welcome from the jump.
A lot of people feel that just the White Sox staying together, you being a part of that, was a major issue. I mean, it was tremendous that you were able to stay together as a team. Looking back on that, how hard was that to accomplish?
What, last season?
Yeah.
Not as hard as you'd think, I guess. I mean, obviously, we didn't win a lot of games, but I don't know if there's a luck statistic out there, maybe one of the peripheral stats, and I'm sure that we did pretty well in that stat in terms of things just never really happened to go our way. It was, you know, we always talk about the Jankowski homer robbery from Vaughn last year, and that was kind of just our season in a nutshell. It is what it is. That was last year, though.
How would you describe the experience with the White Sox over the time you were there?
Yeah, it was great. I loved it. You know, the organization that drafts you, people say typically treats you the best. So it was like it was all I knew. But being over here in Boston, the love has been the exact same. It was a good organization as far as I was concerned.
I feel like you bet on yourself in a couple of ways. Like, one, you wanted to start. Another, you were deliberate about circumstances surrounding a possible trade last year. And you bet on yourselves a couple of times and kind of won.
Yeah. It was cool. I always had a lot of belief in my ability and, you know, had the right guidance along the way and, you know, had a team also in the White Sox that was willing to protect me and down the stretch last year. So it was really just a group effort all around. They were willing to let me start as well. Chris and I, obviously, we've talked about the conversation that I had two Octobers ago now at this point with them. And he had a lot of confidence in me, and it just allowed me to get prepared for the season and take the toll of, you know, a full season as a starter.
Aaron, what was it though, so you feel like you arrived at the ballpark for the first time this
Nothing crazy. It was funny, though, just walking in, because I Ubered here. So showing my ID at the gate, I was like, oh, this is, it was just funny. Yeah.
Right. What's it like just to have that familiar voice, and how has that helped you in your development?
Yeah, it's been cool. You know, I was able to kind of have, like you said, it was just familiarity. It's they look at pitching very similarly, and it also happens to be pretty much how I like to look at pitching as well. So it's just, you know, just continuing the growth that I was seeing here in 24.
Is this new setting kind of changed things for you? High expectations
for yourself, and
now that there's so many high
expectations
all throughout the Boston organization.
Right. Does
that give you an extra goal to
Not necessarily. I mean, I'm chasing greatness every time I touch the mound. Everybody is. It's, you know, I want to throw a complete game no-hitter, and as soon as the first hit's given up, I'm like, all right, let's move on. But it's just seeing how many zeros I can put up every time I go out there.
That was Garrett Crochet meeting the media yesterday in his return to Wright Field, Chicago, here in the opposing dugouts. First time for him inside the opposition's dugout. He is 1-1 on the season so far in 3 starts for the Red Sox. Has a 1.45 ERA, struck out 17 and 18 and 2/3. A little bit of an uncharacteristic 7 walks so far in those 18 and 2/3 innings. He was a little bit wild his last time out, as he issued 4 free passes against the Blue Jays in a game that the Red Sox lost 6-1. Again, he'll be on the mound tomorrow, being opposed by Shane Smith. Hey, Sox fans, join us for $5 Tuesdays. All fans will enjoy a specially priced $5 concessions menu, including draft beers from Miller Lite or Modelo, Garrett Popcorn Stadium Buttery, Vienna Beef Hot Dogs or Polish Sausages, Beggar's Pizza Slices, Nachos, and select Coca-Cola products. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/Tuesdays. Up next, mismatched socks. I'll tell you what I'm talking about right here on White Sox Weekly on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. What? Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller, live from Wright Field, as we get set for game number 2 of a 3-game set between the White Sox and Red Sox. Hey, Sox fans, bring your pup out to the ballpark on Tuesday, April 29th for Dog Day, sponsored by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Grab a seat in the outfield and watch the Sox take on the Brewers at 6:40. Limited availability. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. All right. Mismatched socks. What do I mean by that? Well, Garrett Crochet makes his return as an opposing player tomorrow. I mean, he's here today, obviously, but he's scheduled to pitch against the White Sox for the Red Sox tomorrow. And that got me to thinking, which players in baseball history have donned both White Sox and Red Sox? And that is why we get mismatched socks. So I have put together an all-time mismatched Sox team for you here. Some of these names will be very familiar, and some of these I had to kind of dig a little deeper for people who just barely made the cut. Maybe they didn't have as many illustrious seasons for one particular team, but they definitely played for both. And let's start off with the man who not necessarily Garrett Crochet kind of inspired the idea, but a man who we were talking about the other day on this day in White Sox history, and that is the man behind the plate. There's only one selection you can go with apologies to A.J. Pierzynski, but it is no doubt Carlton Fisk, the all-time mismatched Sox catcher. He had a fantastic career with the Red Sox, and then, of course, if you look back, played more games for the White Sox, so Carlton Fisk behind the plate of my all-time mismatched Sox. At first base, now I had to dig deep on this one because I'm unfamiliar with Shane O'Collins. He played a long time ago before any of us were born, but Shane O'Collins played from the years 1921 to 25 for the Red Sox, and he had a much better career for 10 years with the White Sox from 1910 to 1920. Had 193 stolen bases for the White Sox, 14.6 career WAR for the White Sox. Not as successful, though, for the Red Sox, as he was a career minus 3.4 WAR. So clearly, Shano had run his best days in Chicago. At second base, how about Scott Fletcher? His daughter, Brooke, is on the CHSN broadcast, and Scotty Fletcher had a productive career for both the White Sox and Red Sox. He accumulated 10.5 WAR for the White Sox and 5.8 for the Red Sox. Played for the White Sox from 83 through 91, and then for the Red Sox after that, 93 and 94. At shortstop, Louis Aparicio. Louis Aparicio, clearly most of his damage was done for the White Sox, as we know. Aparicio did play for a short period of time for the Red Sox from 71 through 73 at the end of his career, where he accumulated 4.2 WAR. But, of course, from 56 to 70, Aparicio had a 35.3 career WAR for the White Sox, hit 43 home runs, stole 318 bases in his 15 seasons with the White Sox. At third base, much better career with the Red Sox. Kevin Youkilis, the Greek god of walks. We remember he had that short period with the White Sox, but Yuke had himself quite the career with the Red Sox back in the day. In left field, I went with Andrew Benintendi. Why not? You got to have a current member of the White Sox on this who also had a productive career with the Red Sox. In center field, went with Jim Landis, and I am giving you, yes, I didn't cheat and just go outfield. I'm giving you left field, center field, right field. Give me Jim Landis in center. In right field, look, I think you have to go Harry Hooper, because his career was unquestionably a much better one than the man who I wanted to go with. But again, I didn't see Harry Hooper play because he played from 1909 through 1925. But so we'll go with Harry Hooper, because he was a Hall of Famer and he won 4 World Series. But near and dear to my heart, honorable mention, Ellis Burks. That one fantastic season for the White Sox back in 93, I believe. I believe he had a batting average of in the 350s. So Ellis Burks, honorable mention as my right fielder. At DH, this one's tough. Not really, but it's barely Manny Ramirez, because he obviously did not have a long playing career with the White Sox, but of course certainly made his hay with the Red Sox. So we're going to go with Manny Ramirez as our DH. He usurps Carl Everett primarily on the strength of the fact that he was able to be one of the best DHs of all time for the Red Sox when Poppy wasn't. Maybe you say I'm cheating a little bit there, but Manny DH'd for both teams from time to time. Our utility man, we're going to go with Tony Graffanino. And then in terms of we can build a whole rotation. How about this? I'll give you Garrett Crochet on the mound tomorrow for the Red Sox. Chris Sale, of course, you know what he did for both the White Sox and Red Sox. We can also go with Eddie Seacott, a.k.a. Knuckles, who unfortunately was one of the first members of the Black Sox scandal back in 1919. Bartolo Colon, he pitched for both the White Sox and Red Sox, along with numerous other baseball teams. And then I threw in Tom Seaver, who had obviously most of his success with the Mets, but he did pitch for both the White Sox and Red Sox. And then we'll throw in Jake Peavy and Gary Peters for some honorable mentions if we need to go to a 6- and 7-man rotation in this day and age. And then closing it out, I went with Keith Foulke, but if you liked the year that Tom Gordon had for the White Sox, you can also go with him. So you have a couple of options to close out the game. So there you go. That is your all-time mismatched Sox teams, players who played for both the White Sox and Red Sox in their career. Up next, we're going to have a conversation with Mike Huff, the director of youth baseball for the White Sox. I'm going to ask him about what it was like making his major league debut in honor of Chase Meidroth. We'll do that next, right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Jeff Meller, live from Wright Field, as we get set for Game 2 of a 3-game set between the White Sox and Red Sox. Pre-game coverage starts at 2:30 today, first pitch at 3:10. And right now, it's my pleasure to be joined by Mike Huff, a man who I've interviewed a few times now. And Mike, you're the director of youth baseball for the Chicago White Sox. How did you come about receiving that title?
My dad died when I was 22, 44 mm-hmm. years old. So when I got to the White Sox trade via Cleveland and met Mr. Reinsdorf, for me, obviously, it's the connections. Hey, Northwestern law degree, Northwestern undergrad. And mm-hmm. kind of played with that through the 3 years in Chicago, 3 years in Toronto. But when I got out of baseball, literally, he became my mentor. Like, we would talk every month. We'd probably have lunch every quarter. And I ended up going into real estate, commercial real estate, you know, corporate, big Fortune 500 companies here in Chicago, then down in Texas. And he was sort of that person that I could just bounce ideas off of. My wife passed away, need to get back to Chicago. I'm in Dallas where she was from. And Reinsdorf just kind of said, I've got this pay it forward business that's losing money. And as only Jerry can, kind of said, if I recall, your dad was that college basketball player, so you know about basketball. You grew up in a basketball household. You've got three girls, so you know about softball. You played professional baseball for me, and you've been underwriting operating businesses for the last 10 years. Okay, underwrite this, the Bull Sox Training Academies, and fix it. Like, I don't need to make money with this, but I don't want to write checks. Mm-hmm. So he was the one that brought me back to Chicago after my wife had passed away. And got me the job, and as I fixed it and kind of handed it back to the White Sox, literally Jerry looking at Tim Bizzard kind of saying, okay, you believe these numbers, Tim? And he's like, yes. He's like, you really believe these numbers because you showed me numbers and it's never broken even. He's like, yes, I believe these numbers. And he's like, okay, so we do this with basketball. We do this with baseball and softball. We get rid of these certain people. We move these into the White Sox and into the Bulls, and okay, kind of makes sense. And who wrote this again? Huff. And who's the president right now of the Bull Sox? Huff. And there's no president going forward. No. So he's like, so Mike wrote himself out of the job. And Tim Bizzard was like, yes. As Mike said, his wife passed away. He had three girls. He needed to get back to Chicago. You got him back to Chicago and said, fix something. And he's fixed it. You don't need a president anymore. It's just overhead. And then he looked at Bizzard and said, we're going to keep Mike, aren't we? And Tim said, if I can ask around, yes, if we want to keep Mike, we can keep him. So then they said, all right, well, this jersey program that we've been starting, you're now in charge of that. And that kid zone, that fun thing out in left field, you're in charge of that. And these corporate events that we're doing, you're in charge of that. Oh, and this youth baseball stuff that we still have that has travel teams, camps, clinics, you're still in charge of that. And I'm like, oh, enough. Can we stop at four things? Like, I fixed the one that was broken, and because now it's like 50% of someone's time that you don't really need, now you're giving me three others. So that's how, you know, over the last 5-6 years, as I fixed what was broken out in the suburbs, the White Sox are like, no, you're not leaving, and you're running three other things besides that.
Well, I love that story, Mike. That's fabulous. Mike Huff joining us here on White Sox Weekly. He's the director of youth baseball. Listen, we don't all know. I think a lot of people can relate to that, right? You don't know where your life path is going to lead, especially as you get a little bit older and then things happen. And then all of a sudden, I have to imagine, though, you feel some great reward when you're like you're out today teaching in Naperville. Like, there has to be something pretty cool when you take time and think, you know, I'm passing along my knowledge to the younger generation.
Oh, it's so true, Jeff. And the fun part is not only do I have these kids that, as we are teaching me and my coaches all over the Metroplex, Northwest Indiana, when something clicks in a kid's eyes or all of a sudden he throws a ball that actually goes right to the coach or his dad or mom and just see that excitement, I get as much, if not more, doing, just like you said, what I'm doing in a little bit out here in Naperville is working with the 30, 40 parent coaches. And we have already sent from the youth baseball side practice plans to show from T-ball all the way up to the 13 to 15-year-old kids, here's the drills, the buzzwords, the phrases that you need to do. The T-ball practice, just 2 pages, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. The 13 to 15 is like 10 pages of drills and stuff. But then to sometimes tease the parent who thinks that they know everything when I'm like, no, that's not quite right, and then here's the reason it's not quite right. And to see their eyes kind of spark and to get the thank yous at the end of the summer to say, hey, you know, my team was 6-4 And last year we were 2-12. Like, thank you so much. The kids all had a great experience, and it's just, it is. It's very neat. It's a very fulfilling and very fun job within the White Sox organization.
All right, Mike, so before we get into some other stuff, what's going on this summer? Because I know there's youth baseball, some summer camps going on. If people are interested in, obviously, what brings you some great joy. And I've said this, I've been talking to my daughter recently. She's now a freshman in high school. And the vast difference between having, like, a good teacher, even in a subject matter, whatever it happens to be, that you don't necessarily have a passion for, but when you have a good teacher, it makes all the difference in the world. So what's going on in the summer here? I know we've got a couple of camps going on for folks who are interested.
Yeah, just a few. We only have 54 over the 9-10 weeks. As far north as sort of an Arlington Heights, Palatine, Elgin, Yorkville, you want to go west, City, Northwest Indiana. But WhiteSox.com/play is where you can go. Last few years, we've had almost 3,000 kids enroll, and it is so much fun. It's a four-day camp. Friday is sort of our rain day. It's only $165. I mean, we'll outfit the kids, T-shirt, hat, give them a whole bunch of swag. They're actually getting a sliding mitt as part of the giveaways this year, which we know kids are all about these days. But it is very fun. I mean, we teach very progressively. Day one, it's broken by age, and then you kind of separate with ability a little bit, maybe moving kids up or down by one age group so they're with their same ability level. But we will start and really hit fundamentals Monday, Tuesday, trying to build off what we're teaching Monday, some of the very basic stuff. And then Wednesday, Thursday, it really flows into a little bit teaching and a lot more games where, you know, kids are winning baseball cards and just having a good time. And we encourage the parents, if they can, to hang around and watch their sons or daughters, you know, enjoy a great week. But then maybe they can pick up a few things so that when they're playing catch with them in the front yard or backyard or at the park, you know, they're reinforcing the really good fundamentals.
Fantastic. And what was that? What was that website again, Mike?
Yeah, WhiteSox.com/play. Very White simple Sox. And easy. Once you go there, there will be this huge interactive map of Chicago, and you just find the camp that's closest to you. And understand that we are starting that second week in June, going to that second week in August. So if the family's on vacation in that camp in your town, look at the town next to you. Maybe north, maybe south, maybe a 10-15 minute drive, and that might be in a week that you are present and you need that rug rat to get out of the house for a little bit.
Yeah, WhiteSox.com/play. I already pulled up the map, and you're right, it's littered all over Chicagoland, so hopefully you can find the camp
fun.
That
yep.
fits you. Mike Huff joining me, the director of youth baseball for White Sox here on White Sox Weekly. Mike, we had a real quick, before I get to that, I do want to ask you, because we're on the topic, something I've been talking a lot about on White Sox Weekly is torpedo bats, because of obviously the early season success that the Yankees had. Now, it might be dying down just a bit, but call me a cynic, Mike. I have no doubt that there will be some shrewd capitalists out there who will be targeting youth baseball with new torpedo bats very soon. And as somebody who obviously is very closely linked to this level, what do you think about the potential on the horizon? Because, you know, like I know, people are going to be marketing to youth baseball parents, hey, here's the next great torpedo bat that your son or daughter need.
Yeah, I it's one of those things that I think people forget, that to really square up a baseball with a 34-inch bat in the major leagues or minor leagues, you've got about 6 inches. To really hit the ball hard. If you had a 34-inch aluminum bat and you're a high school kid, you probably have 14 inches to barrel up a ball. Aluminum bats just inherently have a larger sweet spot. So for a major leaguer to say, pitchers are throwing so hard, it is hard. And again, leave that last inch or two off the end of the bat. That's where you break it. But call it 2 inches in off the end, and you've got a 6-inch sweet spot. If I am getting jammed more and more because these pitchers are throwing so hard, how do I redistribute that 6 inches into an area that shows through the video and the technology and all the cameras out there, that if I slide that in toward my hands a little bit, I'm probably going to be able to drive the ball through the infield into a gap or even hit a home run, which is exactly the whole concept behind the torpedo bat. And I think why it has had so much success early is that a bunch of these Yankee hitters, probably those are lazy fly balls because that, you know, the pitch is coming in so hard that they're getting just a little bit jammed, making good contact, but not being able to drive it because it's just a little bit more toward the center of the bat, not toward that sweet spot. And now that they've redistributed it, that ball is getting the extra 10 or 15 feet on that fly ball, and guess what? That's a home run.
So just, you know, tell me if I'm wrong here, but what I'm inferring here is makes sense. You can see why major leaguers like this, especially with dealing with a wooden bat. However, be skeptical, parents out there, if you start to see in the next 2, 3, 6 months, all of a sudden you're getting direct marketing from some company telling you that the new aluminum torpedo bat or however they're going to market it, just be a little skeptical that you don't necessarily need to spend $500-$600 on this next new, you know, concoction that's going to help make your kid a major leaguer.
Exactly, Jeff. Just keep using the bat you have. When he ages out of it a year or two down the road, if you want to readdress it, readdress it. But sliding that sweet spot 3 inches toward his hands at this point, if he's 8, 10, 12, it's not going to make a big difference. He's able to drive a ball through the infield if he's getting jammed a little bit because it's an aluminum bat and their sweet spots are really, really big. So, yeah, to your point, there will be a lot of companies, I'm sure, that are trying to cash in on the phenomenon that is the torpedo bat. But for the parents out there, keep using what you've got. The bats you've got, your sons or daughters are going to be just fine. And only when they grow the extra 4 or 6 inches a year or two from now and you need to buy a new bat, then you can start to consider it. But right now, you're absolutely right, Jeff. Everyone's good with what they have.
Mike Huff, the director of youth baseball, joining us here on White Sox Weekly. All right, Mike, so it's been chilly. It's warmer out here today at Raitt Field, but it's been a little bit chilly, especially for the White Sox on the road trip that they just got back from in the Midwest cities, as it usually is this time of year. What was it like for you when you knew you had to deal with the colder weather? How did you go about maybe changing your approach, or just is it just something you got to battle through? Because some of the White Sox hitters, you know, they've had some tough luck, and I know the conditions have not been forgiving for them.
Oh, yeah. For me, it was laying down a lot of bunts. It was trying to work a few more walks. It was never fun playing in the cold, even growing up here in Chicago, and it was always humorous that the Latin players that were on our teams, whether I was with Cleveland, Toronto, or Chicago, just hated the month of April and part of May because they were raised without the cold and never, as much as you want to say, you know, a major league or even a minor leaguer should be able to make adjustments, when you've been raised a certain way and you play 12 months out of the year a certain way, to then change your mindset to say, hey, guess what? For 6 weeks, we want you to totally change what you're used to and comfortable with. Really, really, really hard. Again, do I choke up a little bit more? Do I become a little bit more selective? Do I have to stretch between innings? Do I have to get on a bike to try to stay loose because it's 40 degrees and my body's tightening up? Of course, but typically there's only one bike, you know, in the tunnel between the dugout and the clubhouse. So one guy can jump on it. You can't have six guys jumping on it. So I think there's always a challenge, especially when you have pitchers throwing as hard as they are, that you can't quite feel the bat. You can't quite move as smoothly and as fluidly. So you end up trying to compromise or minimize certain aspects of your game just to try to barrel it up. Now, again, guy on second, two out, you're trying to get that single to score him. Guy on second, nobody out, you're trying to get him over to third. But even then, with the cold weather, it's hard for your body to react and adjust as normally as it would when it's June or July. And especially, you know, historically, it's been that way for Latin players, I think, more so than Americans. But that's just because of where they grew up and how they learned the game.
Makes sense. Mike Huff joining us for another couple minutes here on White Sox Weekly. The good news is for anyone who's heading out to the game today, weather is beautiful right now. Looks like it's going to be in the mid to upper 50s. Sunshine is out, so looks like a gorgeous day for baseball today here in early April at Raitt Field as the White Sox get set to take on the Red Sox. Mike, we had, even though it was chilly out last night, we had one of those great moments in baseball that I just, as long as I've been watching, I never grow tired of. We had Chase Mydroth receive the call up and then have a fantastic debut. So I have two questions for you regarding this. thinking back on your own career. So Chase Mydroth, the White Sox released the video of Sergio Santos informing him that he did receive the call to the show. And, I mean, listen, in your day and age, we didn't have cameras everywhere recording everything, and then, you know, everything blasted out to social media. But I was talking to Darren Jackson in between innings yesterday, and we were just like, you know, our hearts were warm because we were like, okay, no matter what happens from here on out, Chase Mydroth, lifelong dream has been achieved. So how was it for you? Who broke the news to you, and do you remember what it was like and how excited you were when you finally found out you were going to the show?
Oh, I remember vividly. It was my AAA manager, Kevin Kennedy, who later managed both in Texas and in Boston for a while. And we were playing the White Sox in Vancouver. I was with the Dodgers, and in AAA we were Albuquerque. And the White Sox had really good pitchers back then, and then us in Albuquerque had really good hitters and a couple of good pitchers with the Dodgers. And first game was a five-game series, and, you know, 0-for-4 two-line drives. Next game, 0-for-3 two-line drives. Third game, 0-for-4 one-line drive. Fourth game, 0-for-4 three-line drives. Fifth game, I'm not playing. And I'm looking at it, I'm like, okay. I know I can get a hit in Vancouver. Trust me, it's going to happen. And he's laughing. He's like, you're just not playing today. Take a day off. I'm like, I don't want to take a day off. Like, I'm your leadoff hitter. I'm hitting over 320. Well, not anymore. But, like, I want to be – don't. Game ends. He calls me in. And he goes, Mike, I've been so excited for this moment. Had you in rookie ball, had you in double A, and now in triple A. You're going to the big leagues. And we're looking at him like, dude, if it took going 0-for-4 games and 0-for-16, I would have done that a heck of a long time ago. But thank you very much. And just the feelings, I got to call my wife, called my brother, sister, called my mom. Just, you know, going to the major leagues was something I never really thought was real growing up. It was always just one of those dreams. And just, I loved baseball, loved sports, and just kept progressing. And I think when I started having real success at that AAA level was the first time I let myself think this might actually be real. It's not a dream. This could actually be real if I can keep doing this. And then to have Kevin Kennedy, you know, this hulking guy, just kind of stand up and give me this big hug, because I was just shocked, saying, you know, I am so happy for you because of all the hard work, was something I obviously remember very vividly. I remember the four games leading up to it very vividly, because I thought I was having a great year hitting over 320, and it took going 0-for-4 games in my mind's eye to get that call to the major leagues.
You just needed the secret. You just had to put up a... a hitless streak, and exactly. You'd be in the majors before you knew it. All right, last thing, because I know you got to run, Mike. How about when you got to the majors finally? Last night we saw Chase Mydroth collect his first hit. Now, might have been a little bit of home cooking. I'm not going to lie. Tristan Casas had a chance to make a play, but the scorekeeper was forgiving. Chase Mydroth picks up his first hit. He reached base four times, so no matter what, it was successful.
I know,
evening.
That was just incredible.
But how about for you? When did you register that first hit?
Well, first game, get to Dodger Stadium, and everyone said Tommy Lasorda likes to put in rookies, so be ready. You know, if we're winning by a bunch, losing by a bunch, you know, just get ready. You know, fifth, sixth inning, the couple of veteran guys on the bench were like, let's go down in the cage, we'll loosen up. But just remember, if we're winning or losing, he's going to put you in there. Okay, great. 1-0, we're facing Glavin. He gives up, Ramon Martinez is pitching for us. He gives up a home run in the first, and it's 1-0 till the eighth inning. But sixth inning, fifth inning, I'm in the loosening up. Eighth inning comes around, Ramon's hitting second, and, you know, I'm on the bench. It's 1-0. Like, we got three hits. I'm not going in. You're going to use one of the veteran, you know, guys on the bench, not me. And lo and behold, one of the coaches yelled down, Dave Anderson, you're hitting for Ramon. And so I take my helmet off, my gloves off, get a quick drink, and all of a sudden I hear another coach going, Huff, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm living the dream. What's going on? They go, you're hitting. And I'm like, no, I'm not. Dave Anderson's hitting for Ramon. They're like, no, you're leading off. You're going to hit for Mike Socha.
Ooh.
Mike, a left-handed hitter. Glavin, left-handed pitcher. I think Mike was 0-for-2 with two really bad strikeouts. So the panic, grab the helmet, start to go down this long dugout, and I had three different coaches kind of lean forward, kind of talking about Glavin. First one was like, hey, Glavin, slider, curveball, fastball, changeup. Okay, great. Next guy. Hey, slider. Hey, Glavin. Inside, outside, high, low. Next guy. Hey, remember Glavin. He throws it hard, throws it soft. I'm thinking, okay, I just have to look for every pitch in every location of the plate. Piece of cake. And I literally run into the batter's box. The umpire has to tell me to get out because I'm so late getting out there that he's like, I haven't announced you yet, Huff. And I'm like, oh, right, yeah, Northwestern grad, thank you. I step out of the box. I see the umpire point to the scorekeeper, point to me. And then they say, now batting for the Dodgers, number 45, Mike Huff. And I'm sure Glavin is looking at this, probably laughing. You know, first at bat in the major leagues, this kid is the eighth inning. And all he does is just throw this lazy curveball, thinking, you know, pinch hitter, he's looking fastball. So he just throws this rolling curveball for a strike. But because I am looking for every pitch in every location, because every one of these coaches said it's Glavin, he throws everything, I just see a hittable ball. I swing, line drive, left center, base hit, first at bat.
You ambushed him. Love it, Huff.
I did. I still have the baseball. It's very cool. It's one of the few I have on display in the Huff house.
That's awesome. Mike Huff, the director of youth baseball for the White Sox. Again, if you want to join one of those camps, check them out. They're all over the Chicagoland area and in the suburbs, whitesox.com/play. Mike, have a great day. Thanks for joining us on White Sox Weekly.
Oh, my gosh. You too, Jeff. Great job. Love listening to you guys.
Appreciate it. That is, again, Mike Huff, the director of youth baseball for the White Sox. Hey, Sox fans, bring your family to the ballpark with a family pack presented by ExxonMobil. Starting at just $19, each family member gets one ticket, hot dog, drink, bag of chips, cookie, plus a souvenir 125th anniversary water bottle. For tickets, visit whitesox.com/family. We'll come back and wrap up White Sox Weekly and get things set for Game 2 of White Sox and Red Sox here at Wright Field, right here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly as we wrap things up here today, getting set for White Sox and Red Sox Game 2 of 3 here on the weekend. Enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to win the Ultimate Tailgate. This month's winner and 9 guests will receive VIP access to the Ultimate Tailgate presented by Modelo, VIP parking, and tickets to the Friday, June 6th game against the Royals. Must be 21 and over with a valid ID. To enter, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. One thing I did want to mention before we close out today, the White Sox are doing a really great thing. They have created the Grinder Ball Rule number 45 t-shirts in support of 2005 World Series champion Bobby Jenks and his fight against cancer. All the proceeds benefit Jenks' favorite Chicago charity, Ronald McDonald House Charities of Chicagoland in Northwest Indiana. So this is an opportunity for fans to support families battling cancer. And if you're unaware, unfortunately, Bobby is in a terrible fight against cancer. So the details here, the Jenks-inspired t-shirt features a new addition to the memorable White Sox era of team rules, Grinder Ball Rule number 45. Fight like it's the bottom of the ninth. The t-shirts are on sale now for $30 at whitesox.com/Jenks. Fans also have the option to purchase the t-shirt with an additional donation to RMHC for $45, a nod to Jenks's White Sox number. So there's a limited amount of t-shirts are available for purchase at the ballpark's Charities Corner in Section 154. So Bobby did have this quote: "My family and I are so humbled by the response and support we have received. I want to turn this news into a positive and powerful source of support for families who are dealing with cancer too. During my time in Chicago, I visited Ronald McDonald House, and it means so much to me and my family to use my situation to help others who are also in a fight against cancer. My goal is to get back to Chicago this summer and spend time with my teammates, Ronald McDonald House families, and White Sox families." So yeah, just obviously really tough right now as Bobby Jenks deals with stomach cancer, and this is a great way to support him and White Sox charities, and again, Ronald McDonald House, one of Bobby Jenks's personal favorite charities. Again, the Grinder Ball Rule number 45 t-shirt available at whitesox.com/Jenks. Want to say thank you to Jack McGrath back in the studio, our executive producer, Brendan Riley. Thank you to Mike Huff as well for hopping on and joining us today. All that, again, check out WhiteSox.com/play if you're interested in a White Sox camp for your young one out there. That is going to do it for us here on ESPN 1000. We will be talking to you here momentarily for the pregame show between the White Sox and Red Sox. I'm Jeff Miller. This is the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.